4. He lay half awake in his bed, not really wanting to try. The secret behind Johnny's lethargy was the feeling that he had failed. Maybe the bombs hadn't landed on Cyclo. Maybe all this was just a brief interlude of peace for man. Perhaps soon the beautiful plains of his planet would once more be denied the human race. And even if the bombs had landed and Cyclo was no longer a menace, he had heard of other races out there in the universe, savage races, as pitiless as the Cyclos. How could this planet defend itself against those? It haunted him at every awakening. It plagued his sleep. People now looked so happy and industrious, so revived. What cruelty if it were just a brief interlude. How crushed they would be. Today would be just another day. He would get up, and a Russian attendant would bring in his breakfast and help Chrissy straighten the room. Then McKendrick would come, and they would exercise his arm, and he would try to walk a bit. Something about there being nothing wrong, really, just having to learn to do it again. Then Sir Robert or the parson would come over and sit uncomfortably for a while until Chrissy shooed them out. A few more dull routine actions, and another day would be gone. His failure oppressed him. He saw more clearly than they did how cruel a letdown this would be if the Cyclos counterattacked. He felt a little guilty when he saw a glad face. How soon it might turn to grief. He had given the historian, Dr. McDermott, a colorless outline of the drone destruction, all from the viewpoint of what one could or could not do if another one appeared. And Dr. Mack had well supposed there was far more to the action than that, but he had been chased out by Chrissy. Chrissy had just washed his face, and he was sitting at a trolley table when he noticed something odd going on with the Russian attendant. It really did not thoroughly challenge Johnny's interest, for there were always Scots guarding him in the outside passage against intruders or disturbance. A guard, he had at first protested and then accepted when they all seemed so upset at the refusal. Johnny had not seen this particular Russian in 2 weeks. Others had been taking his place. Once, this Russian had come in with a great big black eye and a triumphant grin on his face. Questioned, Chrissy had explained that the Russians sometimes fought among themselves over the right to serve him. Well, this fellow looked like he could win any fight. As tall as Johnny, heavy-set, with slightly slanted eyes, and dressed in baggy-bottom trousers and a white tunic, he was quite imposing, his bristling black mustache standing straight out on both sides of his big nose. His name was, inevitably, Ivan. After putting down the breakfast, he had drawn back and was standing there at the stiffest attention Johnny had ever seen. A coordinator came slipping in the door, the Scots sentry scowling and privately vowing to send for Sir Robert by runner the moment the door was closed. Johnny looked at the Russian questioningly. The Russian bowed from the hips and straightened up, looking stiffly ahead.
"How do you do, Johnny Tyler, sir?"
His was a very thick accent. He did not go on. Johnny went on eating oatmeal and cream.
"How do you do?" he said indifferently.
The Russian just stood there. Then his eyes rolled appealingly at the Scot coordinator.
"That's all the English he knows, Johnny, sir. He has some news and a present for ye."
Chrissy, with a broom in her hand, her corn-silk hair tied out of her eyes with a buckskin thong, bristled at this violation of proper announcement. She looked like she was going to hit both of them with the broom. Johnny motioned her to be still. He was slightly interested. The Russian was so imposing and was fairly bursting with what he had to say. Ivan barked off a long string of Russian, and the coordinator took it up.
"He says he is Colonel Ivan Smolensk of the Hindu Kush. That's in the Himalayan mountains. They are descended from a Red Army detachment that was cut off there and intermarried locally. There are about 10 groups in the Himalayas. Some speak Russian, some in Afghanistan dialect. They really aren't army units. Colonel to them means father. They are really Cossacks."
The Russian thought this was going on too long. It was more than he had said. So he rattled off another string. The coordinator cleared up a couple of points and turned to Johnny.
"This is very irregular," said Chrissy, her black eyes flashing.
The coordinator was already in awe of Chrissy, and Johnny had to tell him to go on.
It seems like when they found they could travel around, the steps there are huge. A troop, that's their name for the family unit, rode clear over to the Ural Mountains. They got on the radio to him. Anybody can use a radio, it seems. And they gave him some news. Our coordinator there had told them about this base, and that troop for some reason thought there might be a Russian base. They came back and radioed Ivan here about it, and he took off. Anybody can hook a ride on a plane. They schedule round the various tribes about once a week. And he rode like the wind, he says, on their very swift horses, and he went to check it personally, and he's just come back and wants to tell you.
He should tell the council, said Chrissy. Johnny is in no condition to be holding what they call audiences.
The Russian let out another string. The coordinator timidly translated. He did not like crossing Chrissy. She was such a beautiful woman and such a celebrity herself.
There is such a base. It is as big as this one and just as full of atom bombs and hardware and dead men.
Johnny was vaguely interested. Might serve them as a refuge if there were a counterattack. Well, tell him that's fine, and why not clean it up and use it? A brief interchange between the coordinator and the Russian, and then fireworks. Russians splattered off the very walls. Robert the Fox came in, short of breath from hurrying, thoroughly disapproving of anyone disturbing Johnny, as well as short-circuiting proper channels. But he paused. Johnny seemed interested. Not much, but more than Robert had seen for a while. The veteran leaned back against the wall and signaled the coordinator to go on. The coordinator was getting overwhelmed. He was quite used to dealing with important tribal heads and notables, but here he was in the company of three of the most important names this planet had ever had, especially Johnny, sir. But Colonel Ivan was almost stomping his feet for him to translate.
He says that's what ruined the whole human race. He says the valiant Red Army trying to fight the capitalist imperialist warmongers. These are just names to him, Johnny, sir. He doesn't have a political axe to grind. Had their attention on each other and didn't cooperate when an invader landed. And he says while tribal wars will and do happen, international wars among whole peoples are against the good welfare of the people. He says he is for the people of Earth, and people didn't stick together but fought, and this must not happen again. He's very emphatic, Johnny, sir, and he says all the other Russian tribes are also.
Johnny pushed back the tray, and the Russian, suddenly remembering his duty, picked it up. He let out another broadside of Russian. The coordinator pulled out some papers.
They've retained literacy, sir, and he and some of the chiefs drew up some papers. They don't have much paper, so excuse the condition. I think they found it in that base, and they want your agreement to it.
Johnny looked tired to Robert the Fox.
This is council business. The Himalayan chiefs are members of the council.
The Russian seemed to divine what he was saying and rattled off more Russian.
He says no, said the coordinator. This council is over here on this continent, and that base is over there on that continent. He says there are silos of nuclear weapons aimed at this continent, and have been for 1,000 years or so. And he doesn't want anything to happen to you, Johnny, sir. So he wants a force of South Americans and Alaskans, he knows there are almost no North Americans left, to take charge of that base over there on your authority. He says if the Russians have charge of this base here, they won't fire at Russia. And if the people from this continent take charge of that base there, they won't fire on this continent. They've got it all worked out, Johnny, sir. It's all here. They worked it out in Russian. If you say all right, and put a little initial here.
Robert the Fox was watching Johnny. This was the first thing he'd seen the lad take even the slightest interest in. Robert knew it would probably be all right with the council. He saw Johnny looking at him. He nodded. Johnny took the offered pen and wrote his initials on the paper. The Russian seemed to almost deflate with relief. Then he rattled away at the coordinator, who presently said,
"He now has a present for you."
Ivan put down the tray and reached into his tunic pocket. He brought out a gold disc with a big red star in the center of it and two lapel tabs of ancient grade. He gave them to Johnny, waiting for him to accept. The coordinator said,
"That is the cap ornament they found on the Marshal of the Red Army, who was in charge of that base, and those are his lapel tabs. He wants you to know that they are yours, and you are in charge of both bases."
Johnny smiled slightly, and the Russian promptly kissed him on both cheeks and rushed out. Robert the Fox was holding the papers, and Chrissy put the gifts in Johnny's buckskin pouch.
"If this had happened 1,000 or so years ago," said Robert the Fox, "maybe things would have been different."
Chrissy was shooing him to leave. Johnny looked tired.
"The Council will put this through and handle it. There might be vital materials in that base."
"You might get it cleaned up and filtered," said Johnny. "It might help them if gas drones come again." When Dr. McKendrick came to exercise his arm and get him to walk, he told Johnny he was improved. Johnny alarmed him.
"Not improved enough," said Johnny, a bit bitterly. "I may not have been so smart after all."